And more times than I can count, I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Lots to share. The latest on exercise turning bad fat into good fat. Cranberry juice regulates what? And that helps us. The Philippines, light years ahead of the United States, adapting a precautionary principle, protecting its people and food supply from corporate takeover. What did they do? Interesting. Vitamin K can affect arterial calcification. That means it protects you against hypertension and strokes. And new research pinpoints the mechanisms behind tocotrienol's stroke. What is tocotrienol? Why should you be consuming it? Why is it good? I'll tell you. Then, from our environmental segment, in my recent travels, very recent, when driving across the United States or flying, I see vast fires or areas that have been the victims of fires. I study the statistics to see which places are still going to be sustainable and which are not. And we now have mega droughts throughout the entire Southwest. That's a lot of area. In fact, it's about 1/6 the United States. That's a bad omen for forests globally. Caroline Fraser from Yale 360 on why we should pay attention. And then also today from Countercurrents, climate change is like an atom bomb. Really? How? How's that possible? I'll explain that. Also from Ralph Nader, corporatizing national security. That's what it's all about and nothing else. It's purely about profit, not protecting anyone from anything. As you see, we have an awful lot to share. Let's begin. I'm very concerned about genetically modified food, as I know most of you are as well. And I thank you for supporting the grassroots efforts in so many states to get a referendum on the ballot so that you can insist to your legislators, we want our food labeled. If it's genetically engineered, we want to know. And it should also be the same in a restaurant. So that if you are going to buy something, it's going into your body, you don't want to be a human guinea pig. This is the latest why in the United States you and I have to be the one doing it. Our government will never protect us. This is the latest. From Jonathan Benson, genetically modified eggplant found to be unsafe for human consumption in the environment. Field trials, quote, of genetically modified BT eggplant, also known as BT talong, have officially ceased in the Philippines following a major ruling by the nation's Court of Appeals. Representing a massive victory for food sovereignty, the court found that BT talong is a monumental threat to both environmental and human health, and has subsequently ordered that all existing plantings of BT eggplant in test fields be immediately destroyed and blocked from further propagation. Now, like many other nations across the globe, the biotechnology industry has been craftily trying to sneak its genetic poisons into the Philippines under the guise of improving crop yields and reducing chemical use, and you've heard all the ad nauseum excuses. All the typical industry propaganda and lies used to convince the more gullible among us that GMOs are some kind of food production miracle. But the Philippines is not buying all the hype. And unlike the United States, the Southeastern Asian country is taking a bold stand against a technology that has never been proven, not once, safe or beneficial in any way. So, that's good. And good for them. One more reason not to have genetically modified anything. Vitamin K is not the type of vitamin most people know about or use, but you should consider it, because it does a lot of good in the body. The latest comes from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and here's what the study found and why we should pay attention to it and be interested in it. Quote, Low vitamin K1 levels may increase in the progression of arterial calcification or hardening of the arteries. And that's important. They analyzed data from 850 people. Those that had the lowest vitamin K1 levels also had the highest level of high blood pressure. And that is not good, because we know that that's about 1 in 5 or 20% of Americans, adults, are treated for hypertension. Now, you can cause stress and poor diet and lots of salt. Those are all legitimate causes. So don't add vitamin K. You can get vitamin K, K1, in your green leafy vegetables, broccoli, kale, spinach, lettuce. It's easy to get. All right, just make sure you get it, and that way it can help prevent hardening of the arteries. Now, I believe people should take both the tocotrienols mixed, meaning you get your alpha and beta and gamma and delta, and then also take tocotrienols, toco, T-O-C-O, tri, T-R-I, enol, E-N-O-L. And they're a fraction of the vitamin E. And the alpha tocotrienols can offer protection from damage of a stroke by preventing the loss of important genetic transcripts during stroke. This is important. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal of Cerebral Blood Flow and Metabolism. And what it does, it shows us that there is a neuroprotective effect of alpha tocotrienols after stroke by helping to retain important transcripts that are usually lost during a stroke event. A professor Sin of Ohio State University and a research team discovered this. So that's good. You don't need a lot. 50 to 100 units is more than adequate. And it also helps us de-age. Now, exercise, according to the latest research I have from the American Diabetic Association annual scientific meeting, can help turn bad fat into good fat. How's that possible? Well, it's simple. Humans have two types of fat. They have brown fat. That's the good fat. This type of fat burns through calories to generate body heat. And then you have white fat. That's the bad fat. That fat develops as a result of storing excess calories. And it's just an energy reserve, like on your belly or your thighs. People with more brown fat are generally slimmer and better able to stay warm when it's cold, whereas individuals who have high levels of white fat tend to live more, let's say, sedentary lifestyles. The researchers found in this that mice and men who underwent an increased exercise regimen experience a browning of their subcutaneous white adipose tissue. And that's important. Quote, there is more brown fat in leaner children compared with overweight or obese kids. Compared to original white fat caused by sedentary behavior, the new browner fat was much more metabolically active. So, the takeaway message, if you exercise each day for about, with good resistance, power walking, jogging, stationary bicycling in a high stress gear, then you can convert that white fat into brown fat, and that can help you. And also, cranberry juice regulates not just the health of our bladder, but insulin, and that in turn decreases heart disease risks. So boy, did it jump from being a natural way to rebalance bladder infections to saving our lives. This was done at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. It was published in the European Journal of Nutrition. And what they found was simple. Just 2 months of drinking cranberry juice was associated with a regulation of insulin sensitivity and energy and a decrease in homocysteine. That, by the way, is the amino acid. That's an inflammatory amino acid. That's why you should all have it checked. That and C-reactive protein and your HDL to LDL balance. And that's linked to an increased risk of cardiovascular disease. So cranberries, we know, help fight bacterial infections. And But we didn't know until now that it also helps prevent heart attacks. Very good. And it's always get your unsweetened and get the concentrate much more powerful. And finally, two things. There's cancer-killing qualities in what? Dandelion tea. That's according to the latest research being done at the University of Windsor. Quote, dandelion root extract is turning out to be a very aggressive natural remedy for cancer cells associated with leukemia. So for those of you who have leukemia, look for the literature that supports the use of dandelion tea and have that about 3 times a day. And finally, when was last time that you had adzuki beans? A-Z-U-K-I, adzuki. Though I've also heard it pronounced adzuki, but it's adzuki. It's a Himalayan superfood. It's also known as a vine healer. It's common to the Himalayas. It's used in China and Japan. It's been around for a long time, for over 1,000 years. In fact, it was first cultivated 4,000 BC. Why should you care about this little tiny bean that's almost never used in any recipe, unless you're in a strict macrobiotic restaurant? Is because it has higher antioxidant value than cranberries or blueberries, because the adzuki bean has very high soluble fiber, and that can lower the bad cholesterol levels, increase better digestion, and help your heart. It's filled with potassium, iron, copper, thiamine, manganese, zinc, and it has a lot of folate in the B complex 1, 3, and 6, and they're packed with protein, lots of protein. And in Chinese medicine, adzuki beans are called qi zai dou, and they've been used to work with urinary tract infection therapies. They support kidney health. They help reduce edema or swelling. They help purify the blood and remove toxins from the body. And they support reproductive system. They also help reduce the chance of breast cancer due to high levels of what are called saponins, which are found in many beans, not just adzuki. So the next time you look for a recipe, and let's say you're looking for it's a mild bean, doesn't have a particularly strong taste, try the adzuki bean. They're inexpensive, and they're one of just the most perfect sources of food that you can put into your body. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine.
Tennessee,
I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine.
Today on our program, we're going to take more calls. In fact, this entire week, I told our executive producer, Richard Gale, lay off guests because I want to have more commentaries and feedback from the audience. So in about 10 minutes, we're going to go to your calls. I'm going to be sharing some commentaries from Michael Brenner, Norman Pollack, Ralph Nader. Then I have my own. Today, I suggest you get a pencil and paper because last week I reported on the reality of our middle class, that if you took the actual middle class at the 50% level, you're looking at 27th in the industrialized world. We're near the bottom of what we actually own. Now, that means all your investment, the value of your house, your car, you put it all together and deduct your expenses, and that's your net value. It's about $36,000. But the average middle-class person living in Australia, it's $200,000. And New Zealand, it's about $176,000. And I went right down the list of all the other countries, including Spain and Greece, that their actual net value is worth more than in the United States. We're right at the bottom. So that was the reality. Today, a blueprint for de-ghettoizing America and reestablishing a healthy middle class. I'll set time aside for this in about 10 minutes. Let me also mention that on this evening's Progressive Commentary Hour, which, by the way, is right up there as one of the most downloaded shows in all of America, I have a continuation of our conversations with remarkable minds. One guest, the state of the national and global economy. You won't want to miss this. Dr. Stephen Leeb will be there, and we're going to talk about everything in depth, just the two of us. I have some ideas. I'm going to share my ideas of where I think gold is going, silver is going, best places to invest, best places to live, and what is good or bad about other countries, what they're doing. So that is at 7 p.m. Tune in to the Progressive Radio Network, or if you got a cell phone or any phone, just dial this number. This is the number one number in America for those listening to my radio program, 619-550-0869. Write it down. Keep it. 619-550-0869. Because you never know when some of the non-commercial radio stations that we're on go out of business because of running out of money. Well, we don't go out of business. We're here every day. We originate from our studios at 83rd and Broadway. I'm on the road right now, and this way you'll always be able to hear it. 619-550-0869, or you can listen. You can listen over your mobile device by going to prn.fm or tune in app or Stitcher, S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R, and or you can listen over your computer at prn.fm or tunein.fm and a lot of other sources. Now to our environmental segment. This is from Caroline Frazier from Yale 360. It's short, but it really is important because it shows when I'm out there traveling how bad it is. And recently I was in Denver on PBS, and the program I was presenting they thought was a little controversial because it dealt with what could go wrong and how to prepare for it. And I remember Sherry Bernstein, the coordinator, saying, you know, I took a lot of flack to put you on, but we're going to have put you on 11 o'clock at night when no one's listening or watching, when nothing's on out here. And because some of the local people think that it's not about scaring people, I said, I'm not here to scare anyone. I'm here to inform them. And so we did the show. Well, lo and behold, it became their number one hit for March and now number one hit for June. Got highest ratings. They generally rate 0 to 5, and this was 5++. Never before in their station's history had they gotten a show that got that response. And I said at the time, you know, you're right in line for mega fires. Well, guess what happened? They now have the worst fires in the state's history. In one afternoon, 455 homes were burned to the ground. And that's just in one state. So every place that thought they were immune, couldn't happen to them. We have a multi-million dollar gated community in Vail and Aspen. Some homes run, you know, $50 million. Well, that's meaningless in the face of the fire they're having. And they're running out of water in Colorado. In fact, of all the states in America, the two states that are most likely to go dry for the average citizen and not be able to sustain industry, government, people, and agriculture, Oklahoma and, well, actually three, Oklahoma, Kansas, Colorado. Colorado's number two. So for all the reasons of organic farms and orchards in the high country and beautiful, you should bet it is. I drove through Telluride, through Aspen. I drove all over the state. Now it's a different look. Quote, As brutal fires torch tender, dry, dense forest and neighboring homes in American Western states, researchers are examining the relationship between drought, wildfire, and warming climate, predicting mass forest die-offs and prolonged mega-droughts in the Southwest. These forces are accelerating, they say, and already transforming the landscape. Unchecked, they may permanently destroy forests in the southwestern United States. Across the West, mega-fires have become the norm. With climbing temperatures, after a century of fire suppression, the total area burned has tripled since the 1970s. The average annual number of fires over 10,000 acres is 700% what it was. Fighting and suppressing fires costs more than $3 billion a year, not to mention lives lost. So understanding what, if anything, can be done to reduce intense forest fires has assumed an urgent priority. Currently suffering the worst drought in U.S. history, New Mexico has emerged as a natural experiment in mega-drought, a laboratory for understanding drought's deep history in the region. With a highly variable climate, Southwest boasts perhaps the best-studied mega-drought history in the world. It's the home to dendrology, the science of studying tree rings, first developed at the University of Arizona. And the pronounced seasonability of hot summers followed by cold winters produces well-defined rings. And now it goes on to talk about what they're actually finding. And here's their summation. Making matters worse in the near term, forests hit by so-called stand-destroying wildfires may not recover. During a recent phone interview, Craig Allen, the co-author of the Nature magazine paper and a research ecologist at the Jemez Mountain Field Station near Los Alamos, explains that the catastrophically hot fires seen recently in New Mexico, while a natural result of a century of fire suppression and dense growth during wet periods, creates conditions of permanent forest loss through type conversion. Basically, high-severity fires that burn over a wide period subvert the ability of southwestern reproduction, a process requiring nearby mother trees to drop their seeds. Ponderosa pines, for example, can't cast their seed much more than 100 yards, virtually ensuring that large forest gaps will be replaced by shrub and grasslands, but unfortunately consequences for a range of forest services, particularly those provided by delicate watersheds. Quote, these anomalous big patches where every tree is killed creates a very high risk they won't come back as forest. The West drastic drought-related fires may foretell what could happen to forests globally as the climate warms. Tree death has been on the rise across America's West, according to the New Science study. And recent analysis from the National Center for Atmospheric Research projects, quote, severe and widespread drought. And it gets worse. These conditions have already taken a toll. This year, NASA published a study on mega drought in the Amazon, where severe drought caused a dieback of old growth canopy across the area the size of California, covering 30% of the Amazon. Rainfall gradually recovered, but to the researcher's surprise, satellite images revealed that the damage has been lasting, caused by the same warming of Atlantic seawaters that empowered Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, that once in a century drought was quickly followed by the next year another drought, affecting almost half the Amazon. The forest canopy loss appears related to prolonged drought stress. And, quote, I don't want to be a prophet of doom, Allen says, but then he is, and talking about how bad it is getting. And it's getting bad. Quote, even 2 years after a major fire that killed 44,000 acres in just 13 hours, that's an acre per second. And it said it went on to burn 156,000 acres. It was the largest fire in the history of Mexico, New Mexico, a record that stood just 11 months when a bigger fire burned to the south. Even 2 years later, the view from the mesa is jaw-dropping. The forest, a gap of 40,000 acres wide, where every tree is dead. As the wind whips grit through our eyes, Williams tells me that trees in some areas burn so hot that the trunks vanished, leaving ghostly holes. Others flash burn from heat alone, their crisp, dead needles still intact. Photographs taken afterwards show a moonscape of ash. Few living things have returned. Shrubs, clumps of grass, a few splashes of Indian paintbrush. But trees, none. Ponderosa pine may not come back. The intense heat sterilized the soil and destroyed virtually all biomass across wide areas, creating huge gaps that trees will not be able to recede. Colorado saw this after 2002 when Hayman Fire left a gaping 50,000-acre hole. Except for a fraction, it has not grown back. Gazing across the Rio Grande Valley, we can see another manifestation of mega drought, a ballooning cloud from another fire sparked by the Pecos Wilderness last night. Later that afternoon, the plume reached 20,000 feet, looming over Santa Fe, whose own watershed has been closed to the public since 1932 because of the threat of fire polluting two reservoirs that supply 40% of its water. The watershed has been thinned, and otherwise, no one in Santa Fe would have any water to drink. Well, that gives you an idea why Nevada, New Mexico, 80% of California, Oklahoma, Utah, Colorado, Kansas, Indiana, half of Texas, Georgia, half of Florida. These are not places to live in the future. I'm Gary Null. We're here to talk about issues. We talk about health and nutrition and the environment. And again, not that that's bad news. It's just aware. Be aware so that you don't make mistakes of where you go. Now, a brief moment for a premium that we haven't offered in a long time. And this is a premium that I think is right up everyone's need. My brand new book, which I'm happy to say for 4.5 months, it's been on the bestseller list of Amazon. It's called The Joy of Juicing. And with it, a documentary, a very popular documentary. Got really good feedback when I premiered. I only premiered at one station just to get some feedback. And it's called The Joy of Juicing. It's a brand new documentary. And the film is about far more than juicing. It's about optimizing your health and reversing and preventing diseases. It's a great film to detoxify. In fact, I opened the film with some world-renowned doctors, Neil Barnard, founder of Physicians for Responsible Medicine, Dr. Joel Furman, Dr. Caldwell Esselstein, Dr. Gerald Boedeker, professor of public health policy at Columbia University, and John McDougall, and T. Colin Campbell, and Jacob Gould. We have all these great people in the beginning of the film talking about the nature of diet and disease and what kind of diet we should be eating and examples of it. And then I interview people from New York on the streets and in Harlem and the Upper West Side and at Columbia University to get their ideas of what they're eating and drinking and why. And the most articulate, intelligent, educated, insightful of the interviews came from a juice bar up in Harlem. And just down the street, I just walked the camera crew from Burger King and Kentucky Fried Chicken and McDonald's right down. And by the way, half the people I interviewed were from my radio audience. That was what was surprising. You'll see that in the film. And there we have the other people who are really making conscious choices. Then you get the book. And the book is really a description of what each food does that we take. Why, if you're going to have wheatgrass, why? What's in it? Or blueberries or kiwis or lemons, whatever it is. And then I did something different. Under each juice, I categorize it by what you want to do with it. So, for example, you want allergies. You want to get rid of allergies. Well, I have the juices in here and the nutrients that go into them. And I have the antihistamine supreme and dandelion fix and sneezes. I have about 4 juices just for asthma. And I explain how to juice, but then what to add to it. So you're getting this, in effect, this a nice punch to everything, the anti-aging juices, the arthritis, anti-arthritis juices. There are about 10 of those, the brain and nervous system tonics, cardiovascular for your heart, cholesterol, how to lower your cholesterol, how to prevent a cold or flu, for your mouth and oral hygiene, for depression, for detoxification, for diabetes, for energy and stamina, for eye care, for headaches and liver cleanse. All these different conditions, I have the juices and the protocols that make it really easy for people to get the right kind of nutrient in them. So it's called The Joy of Juicing, brand new book, now bestseller, 6 printings, according to my publisher, in just 2 months. That's nice. That helps a lot. And then the documentary that goes with it. Now, normally this would cost you about, let me just see, I'll tell you exactly what it would cost you. It would cost you $58. That's right, $58. But it's only costing you $30. And all of that money goes to this radio station. So The Joy of Juicing, the book and the video, something you could really benefit from. You will benefit from, and it'll be fun. And it's only a small amount of money, $30. It'll be shipped right out within probably tomorrow. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And if you want to buy the Joy Juicing book and the documentary as a gift for someone else, when you call in, just say who you want it to go to, and we'll even inscribe a nice little note from you to whoever you want it received, a mother, father, aunt, uncle, a kid in college. It's a great gift, all right? And it's great for you to use. Plus, there's 150 other recipes in here, all kinds of wonderful recipes, not juicing recipes, regular recipes, you know, for salad, soup, sandwiches, spreads, all vegan, all healthy, all gluten-free. All right, desserts. So it's all that in this big book. It's a good-sized book, and 277 pages. Joy Juicing, the book. It is now 4.5 months on the Amazon bestseller list. It was number 9 and number 10, so we're happy about that. Call now and get it. $30 for the book and documentary together. 877-627-5065. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is a program about empowerment. Ralph Nader is a person that has spent his entire career empowering us. This is from Counterpunch, and we have posted it on our website. By the way, I want to thank the 40,000 downloads of our articles yesterday. That's a typical day. We put up about 70, 80 articles, all on progressive themes in about 50 different categories throughout the day and then through the night as well. This is Corporatizing National Security. It's short but important. Here's what he says. Privacy is a sacred word to many Americans, as demonstrated by the recent uproar over the brazen invasion of it by the Patriot Act-enabled National Security Agency. The information about dragnet data collecting of telephone and internet records leaked by Edward Snowden has opened the door to another pressing conversation, one about privatization or corporatization of this government function. In addition to potentially having access to private electronic correspondence of American citizens, what does it mean that Mr. Snowden, a low-level contractor, had access to critical national security information not available to the general public? Author James Bamford An expert on intelligence agencies recently wrote, quote, "The Snowden case demonstrates the potential risks involved when the nation turns its spying and eavesdropping over to companies with lax security and inadequate personal policies. The risks increase exponentially when those same people must make critical decisions involving choices that may lead to war, cyber, or otherwise," end quote. This is a stark example of the blurring of the line between corporate and government functions. Booz Allen Hamilton, the company that employed Mr. Snowden, earned over $5 billion in revenues in the last fiscal year, according to the Washington Post. The Carlyle Group, the majority owner of Booz Allen Hamilton, has made nearly $2 billion on its $910 million investment in, quote, government consulting. It is clear that national security is big business. Given the value and importance of privacy to Americans' ideals, it is disturbing how the terms privatization and private sector are deceptively used. Many Americans have been led to believe that corporations can and will do a better job handling certain vital tasks than the government can. Such is the ideology of privatization. But in practice, there is very little evidence to prove this notion. Instead, the term privatization has become a clever euphemism to draw attention away from a harsh truth. Public functions are being handed over to corporations in sweetheart deals by publicly owned assets, such as minerals on public lands and research development breakthroughs, are being given away at bargain basement prices. These functions and assets, which belong to or are the responsibility of taxpayers, are being used to make an increasingly small pool of top corporate executives very wealthy. And taxpayers are left footing the cleanup bill when corporate greed does not align with the public need. With this in mind, let me not mince words. Privatization is a soft term. Let us call the practice what it really is: corporatization. There's big money to be made in moving government-owned functions and assets to corporate hands. Public highways, prisons, drinking water systems, school management, trash collection, libraries, the military, and now even national security matters are all being outsourced to corporations. But what happens when such vital government functions are performed for big profit rather than the public good? Look to the many reports of waste, fraud, and abuse that arose out of the overuse of corporate contractors in Iraq. At one point, there were more contractors in Iraq than Afghanistan than U.S. soldiers. Look to the private prisons, which make their money by incarcerating as many people as they can for as long as they can. Look to privatized water systems, the majority of which deliver poor services at higher costs than public utility alternatives. Visit privatizationwatch.org for many more examples of the perils, pitfalls, and excesses of rampant, unaccountable corporatization. In short, corporatizing public functions does not work well for the public, consumers, and taxpayers who are paying through the nose. Some right-wing critics might view government providing essential public services as socialism, but as it now stands, we live in a nation increasingly comprised of corporate socialism. Ralph Nader. Now, to an issue that I said I would address, and I will. And then we'll take your calls at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I believe that we have had an intentional policy of cutting back on infrastructure, cutting back on the needs of the average person, keeping the minimum wage in place at a low level, and improper taxation, meaning the large, powerful people just didn't pay their fair share. That's why I believe in one flat tax that nobody can get out of if they're a corporation doing business in or out of the United States. That would bring us an additional $1.5 trillion in revenue per year. But there are other things we can do that has led to the ghettoization of America and its middle class. Here are I'm going to share them in no particular order. By executive order, the administration should place a ban and nullify all derivative and credit default swaps. There is nearly $179 trillion downside liability among the top four banks alone, and the total debt reaches several hundred trillion more when all banks and financial institutions are included. pumping additional billions, hundreds of billions of dollars into failing banks will not work because their massive debts are now insolvent. They are insolvent. The 1933 Glass-Steagall Act needs to be modified to address the current global economic reality and reinstated in order to place controls over wild speculation, re-regulation, and lowered interest rates, and to set a clear division between speculative investment firms from conventional savings and loan banks. Insolvent banks should be streamlined towards easy bankruptcy and nationalization, and then enable them to start afresh as savings and loan banks within a reformed regulatory structure. Such regulations would require banks to limit their loan capacity against their deposits to 8-to-1. There is the need for a law or presidential executive order banning speculative trading in those commodities that are essential to the sustainability of human life, such as water, food, land, and seeds. Enact an executive order to halt all speculative investments in currencies. In addition, a 35% tax without possibility of deductions should be placed upon hedge funds and equity partnerships. All hedge funds and equity partnerships should be restricted to a 2-to-1 borrowing ratio. This will substantially prevent the massive speculation that has occurred during the last 25 years. And furthermore, all short selling should be made illegal. Qualified borrowers with proper due diligence and 20% down payment and proper collateral should be able to receive loans without being rejected. Mandate landlords to reduce rent on all businesses earning less than $5 million a year in gross sales. For example, the average rent in New York City is 100% above the realistic rental value. A mandated reduction in business rentals would prevent many businesses from failing, and we've had over 175,000 failings thus far. And no longer allow landlords to give the tenant their property real estate taxes. Right now, everyone I know, myself included, must pay our landlord's real estate bill. Implement a moratorium on all home foreclosures and auto repossessions in order to allow the market to return to a realistic deflated market value. This would permit more people to remain in their homes, strengthening the value of the family in the home and the neighborhood as well, while benefiting qualified buyers to afford a new home. You should not buy a home in an inflated market. Right now, we are seeing massive amounts of home purchases, but that's because of large blocks of homes going to speculative buyers who are renting them out or waiting to reboost the value in a reinflated market. And there's another effort right now to reinflate the market. Lending institutions should have all of their mortgages renegotiated by federal mandate and eliminate all interest except for 2% and forgive it. By executive decree, reset all mortgages, and especially those ALT home loans that are over $200 billion. Bank and credit card corporations should provide a 100% margin of profit for themselves when borrowing money from the Federal Reserve, and what these financial institutions charge consumers. For example, right now, qualified bank borrowing at the Fed window is 0.2%. A new cap would then prevent them from charging more than 2% to any borrower. Now that people could afford, and yet it would still give them over 100% profit. Across the board, the government should require all lending institutions to forgive credit card, mortgage, and auto loan interest rates completely. That would be about $1 trillion, which is chump change for them. Did we forget we've given them $21 trillion, and they gave us nothing in return? Increase unemployment insurance by an additional 1 year. All financial indicators point to a further rise in bankruptcies, layoffs, and growing joblessness during the next year and a half, and probably longer. Regenerating substantial job growth to offset job loss is always going to be important, but there is nothing that they're doing that would do that. I have a simple process. First, give all qualified small businesses a zero interest loan of $1 to $10 million. For each $1 million, they have to hire one employee at a living wage with health benefits. Now, if you look at how many small businesses we have and how those small businesses could grow and expand, and if you look at how many other people would qualify with a business, you could easily employ an additional 5 million Americans. And that would not burden the American people. The Bush administration's 2005 bankruptcy bill that enslaved citizens and virtually overturned the rationale for bankruptcy to restore Americans to a life of normalcy, this bill should be completely rescinded. The administration should make every effort to protect retirement investment, including Social Security, by guaranteeing citizens retirement savings and insured money markets. No private investment firm should ever be allowed to make risky, speculative investments in people's retirement savings. Implement an aggressive measure to shorten the inequality earnings gap between the nation's super rich, now 1%, owning 20% of the gross domestic product, and the average citizen, 1 in 3 workers, earning less than $15,000. And you do this by how? It is simple. By guaranteeing a living wage, on the one hand, that means simply that no company will go broke. It just means that instead of having massive bonuses for the people controlling a corporation and an extra large, dividend for the stockholders or valuing the stock, you'll be reintroducing that money into employees' pockets where they can use it. And then one flat across the board tax. This would be a corporate tax on every person or corporation, and it would be 20%. That would bring in revenue because you could eliminate the IRS, which should be eliminated. And then you could have sales tax at the state level and local level to supplement. Therefore, there'd be no income tax. There'd be no property tax. In a civilized society with people who have the understanding, we should not be having so much of our hard work and effort go to such a corrupt set of bureaucracies, especially when you consider how much is wasted by the military-industrial complex, $1.4 trillion. And our national security efforts and our war-making efforts, we are paying for that. And we shouldn't have to. Also, put a halt on sales tax breaks to utility companies that charge taxes to their service customers. For example, citizens are charged a variety of taxes on their monthly utility bills. However, rarely does the utility company pay these over to the government. Xcel Energy, which provides electricity to 8 states, collected $723 million in taxes from customers, but will not pay any of that over. It kept it. Reduction of redundancies and inefficient bureaucracies at all levels of government needs to be enacted upon oversight of the consumer. The current Department of Defense budget should be cut by 80%. That's all that's really needed to defend Americans. Many defense programs will be obsolete before their completion. Currently, the Department of Defense controls funds for 737 bases in 130 countries. These are manned by over 1.5 million military personnel, including those in the Middle East area. Aside from the overseas bases, there are approximately 6,000 military bases on American soil and the U.S. territories. Together, the military owns or rents over $600 billion in real estate. Half of these bases can be terminated immediately with substantial savings to taxpayers. There's no longer need to serve in any of these areas. We should be substituting instead of legitimate humanitarian or democratic purposes instead of what we have been doing. We could easily save $200 billion a year. The government needs to immediately implement a groundwork for universal health care plan, and the entire federal health agency system requires dramatic restructuring and return to a real science-based and type of health care and medical care instead of the patronizing towards the consumer and benefiting pharmaceutical interest. 790,000 Americans died of iatrogenic or medically induced death in just 1 year. The cost of enormous medical interventions is substantial. We're spending over $3 trillion. And what do we get for it? No diseases are prevented, and more people are treated with bad medicine, hence more people die. We need good quality medical care, and we're getting None of that. We could be saving $1 trillion a year if we took the profit out of insurance companies and brought back the cost of medicines we do need to the price of what a generic version would be. Pass legislation that would immediately enforce the least expensive Medicare and Medicaid drugs and VA drugs, and that would save us $100 to $150 billion a year. Now, I don't have time to go through all, but that gets you started. I'll deal with other areas on our next program. Now, let's say hello to John from California. Hi, John.
You said that 20% of California is still livable in. Would that be maybe up near the Oregon border? I'm down in...
Yes.
I'm down below Los Angeles, Orange County.
You're not in a sustainable area.
Right. But could you tell me what cities would that be? Would that be like, maybe Eureka, Trinidad, Crescent City, something like that?
That is correct.
Oh, I kind of figured. Okay, thank you very much.
All the best.
Bye.
Let's say hello to John from Long Island. Hi, John.
Hi, Gary. This is John again. How are you?
Good.
Great. Gary, my topic was going to be epigenetics and the discussion with Angelina Jolie and surrogate moms. But I think just to stay on your topic for today, we talk about being prepared. And I know you and your guests like Chris Hedges and Gerald Celente have been talking about these bubbles and looking at my computer and the stock market and what's going on in the world economically. I mean, it looks like the bubbles are about to burst. And my point is... Does it really have to get that bad where everything just falls apart in order for us to get balance? Because I think the key here is balance, a balanced books, a balanced economy, mm-hmm. just like we have a balance in our diet, balanced
okay.
pH.
What kind of work do you do, John?
Environmental construction.
Okay, well, that's a very noble cause that you're engaged in. You should feel good each day. I'm sure you do, because everything that you do is helping another human being live in balance with nature. There was a very famous actor who was playing Tony Soprano in The Sopranos who died of a heart attack, massive heart attack. And when you look at him, you have to ask, if you had a conversation with him a day before his heart attack and you said, you know, Tony, you're from his show, you are literally at death's door. Your arteries are clogged. You have inflammation all over your body. You're morbidly overweight. Your liver is diseased, your kidneys diseased, your brain cells are going because you are heavy drinking. Isn't it time now to stop and try another approach to life? What do you think his reaction to you would be?
He would continue.
I don't think he would have just continued. I think he would have told you that it was none of your business. You know, you make your choices, he makes his, and he's fine.
Right.
Until he's not. Now, John... Tell me where you have seen at the local level with Hurricane Sandy, people saying, you know, this is really the wrong place to live in the future. It might have been really nice in the past, but now I hear that their storms are going to get worse instead of lighter, heavier. And what could hit us next could be a category 2, 3, 4, or 5. And if we rebuild, we're just going to get washed away again because the sea's rising. Water expands when it's hot. It's coming here. And how many of those happen versus all the people rushing to get it done by summer and July 4th to get the people back to the beaches to show people we're okay?
No, definitely, and I'm seeing that firsthand. Right down in Long Beach, I make the trip. We're doing an environmental project down at Atlantic Beach prior to Sandy, and the boardwalk that's going up, I'll drive down the road and see the ocean to my right, which looks a lot closer than it did from a couple of years ago because I'm from around the area, and the bay on the other side, and I just can't believe my eyes what I see, the amount of construction that they're trying to get done in such a short period of time, not looking at the big picture in maybe the next storm, which could be this summer or a couple of years from now, and how everyone is getting all revved up with, hey, we're going to get people back here, the economy, everybody's going to have the parade and the ribbon ceremony, only to see this really be a waste of money, and a lot of people's lives and life savings are going to be wasted. And to me, it breaks my heart. But that's the MO that you have right now.
Okay, and then let's look at the larger picture. When it comes to our constitutional rights and our liberties, our First and Fourth Amendment, we are not protesting. A few are, a small percentage of the population are, but the vast majority are not. So they don't mind that someone is invasive into their life, knows everything they're doing, have said, spoken about, where they're going, and can monitor them at all times, even their homes. So to go back to your original statement, which was not rhetorical, then is it not true that there is nothing sadder than when we wake up one day and our illusions are dead? It's sad if you're the average person because that's all that you believed in. It's liberating if you believe in the power of the individual to control their own lives. So for those of us who care about truth, we're actualizing. We're eating right. We're living right. We're promoting the principles we believe in. We, the people who care, are the ones who let the people in Vermont, Connecticut, Maine know that we want a bill passed for genetic engineering. The average person who's out there stuffing their fat face with everything they can, and with an attitude from hell and a fashion statement from Walmart, you know, says, I'll do what I want to do. And I say, fine. But when you have your heart attack, are you going to pay for the bill, or are you going to ask me to? The contradictions in the way people are living are palpable, and it's everywhere. So just be aware, your choices, when you become alive and clear, are going to help you and your family. Just as you try to talk with your neighbors who don't want to hear what you have to say and are actually angry with you for even suggesting it. All the best to you. Thanks for calling in. John from Long Island. Luann Panessi. Luann, you're going to take us out of today's show, and what's yours?
Okay, well, how's this to top things off? With all the scandals with the IRS, someone sent me this email from your audience. Says the IRS sends $46 million to 24,000 unauthorized aliens at one address in Georgia. Now, if we make an oversight while paying our taxes, you better believe you're going to be audited, fined, held completely accountable. Meanwhile, in 2011, the IRS accidentally sent this money to these unauthorized alien workers to one address in Atlanta, Georgia. So this is coming to light thanks to the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration, the audit report. So, of course, your audience, other people have sent me this same article, and they want to know what your thoughts are on this.
My thoughts are that we shouldn't have an IRS at all. We shouldn't have the bureaucracy. They shouldn't have the right to police us. They shouldn't. The American public should not be fearful of their government, and we are. The people are afraid now if you demonstrate that you'll end up on an FBI terrorist list. They've already so designated people who are showing us the danger of talking about what goes wrong with a farm cruelty. You see an animal being abused, you report it, you're the one who's put on a terrorist list, not the farm or the workers who committed the brutality. That's the dystopian notion that we're living by. So the IRS is just one example. The Department of Homeland Security, the other 16 intelligence agencies, they're all redundant. We don't need any of them in a civil society. We don't need any of them to protect us from any form of threat. But as long as you create the illusion that we do, while you're creating the illusion, and as Ralph Nader said, privatize security, privatize all these services, then the people who are in the loop benefit and the American people don't. Then one day you wake up and you realize, gee whiz, you paid more, a higher percentage of your wages in taxes than General Electric, and they made $5 billion profit. That's the system. The system has to be changed. And it won't be changed as long as we continue to believe in the way that we elect our officials through these campaigns. Elections should be without money being involved. In fact, should be banned. But lobbying should be banned also. We're not near going to do any of this. So we're going to have a crash and a breakdown completely in every aspect of our institutions before we can have a breakthrough. And that's what I see. I hope I'm wrong. Thanks for your call, Luann.
Okay.
We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing, by the way, more tomorrow, but on the Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 p.m. tonight. That's going to be one very insightful program. You won't want to miss that. Let your friends know about it. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about the Zimmerman trial with the prosecutor as co-defendant. Our guest is attorney Alton Maddox, and he is going to be sharing with us a bill of particulars that show that the special prosecutor in the case is actually doing a compromised case. And we'll be following his legal arguments on that score today.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to hearing it. Utrice Lead, right now, please stand by.
I was dancing with my darling to the Tennessee Waltz.